you're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me. We are going to be talking with Karen Giblin and Dr. Maish Seibel, the authors of Eat to Defeat Menopause. Karen Giblin is the founder of the Red Hot Mamas, the largest menopause education and management program in the United States and Canada. And Maish Seibel is the director of the Complicated Menopause Program at the University of Massachusetts Medical School and is the founder of Health Rock, a health education program that uses music to make learning a fun experience. Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food.
Our pleasure.
Thank you very much. We're going to talk about a very hot topic and ways to deal with it.
Okay, great. Now, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Karen Giblin.
And Dr. Seibel?
Yes,
okay,
Maish Seibel.
Great. I got it right.
Awesome.
I got it right. Great. Okay. Well, this is a very hot topic, and, you know, we don't talk about it enough. And I think a lot of medical practitioners don't talk about it enough or don't know enough about it. At least not many of the ones that I've spoken to. Or at least
you know, it takes a lot of time to talk about menopause, and that's one of the issues because it is something that we have to educate women about and talk to them about it. And because it does take time, there often isn't enough time in a typical visit.
Well, especially not with our healthcare situation the way it is today where patients have to get in and out quickly.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's one great thing about some of the things that you're doing because you both have great websites and lots of wonderful information. I was just looking at your site, Dr. Seibel, and there's so many great little videos up here. This is drseibel.com. That's spelled out drseibel.com. And lots of really helpful, informative stuff, and it doesn't cost anything.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of information, and because
how come you're
the
so
whole
good?
Motto is it's better to stay well than to get well.
Yeah.
And the only way people can do that is with education.
And I also want to quickly mention the other site, redhotmamas.org, and that's Karen Giblin's site. And again, there's lots of great information there. But let's just touch on a few things. Certainly we don't have a lot of time, but just to get people a little hot about this topic.
No pun intended.
I can't help myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so I have a question, and that is it true that there are other places in the world where the women don't experience the extreme symptoms that some of us experience here in the United States?
Well, you know that that some of menopausal symptoms are universal. Some of them, such as hot flashes, do have some cultural aspects to it. So the women in Asia, for instance, are less likely to complain of hot flashes, possibly because they eat a lot of soy and other kinds of phytoestrogens, but they do complain about that particular symptom less.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's important, and that's sort of a clue to the rest of us who don't enjoy these hot flashes.
You're right. I want to mention to you that about 75% of women will experience hot flashes. So there's many of us out there that are getting the hot flashes not only during the daytime, but at night, and it's certainly disturbing our sleep and making us cranky the next day, irritable, and also puts us at certain risk of developing diseases. So it's important that if a woman does experience hot flashes, that she speak to her healthcare provider.
Well, that's one of the disadvantages of loss of estrogen, because estrogen does diminish the REM sleep, or the rapid eye movement sleep, and that does leave a woman feeling very much more tired. And also, the REM sleep is a time during the night that people incorporate or process all of the complex thinking and issues that are emotionally related.
Mm.
That's when that time of sleep is when we process that. So the lower estrogen causes the loss of that time of sleep.
Now, I remember reading somewhere, and I don't remember where it was, and it was a long time ago, but those that have higher estrogen levels before menopause then those that have lower estrogen levels will experience more symptoms after menopause because of the difference, the greater difference in the drop of estrogen. Am I making any sense here, or is that...
Well, it's kind of, if you have a large differential, in other words, if your estrogen levels abruptly get lower, for instance, like with the surgical menopause where the ovaries are removed in a woman before she's actually old enough to go through menopause, she's going to have a lot of really significant symptoms. And the more that the person's estrogen levels drop, the greater the delta, the more difference the change between her earlier estrogen levels and the levels she now has. So she will may be more symptomatic.
And are there things that one can do when... I'm asking personally because I did go through that. I had advanced ovarian cancer 5 years ago, and fortunately I am exceptionally healthy right now, but I did go through...
Wow, congratulations to you.
Yes, I know. I was one of the under 20%. but there are reasons for that, and it's all about my food. but when you have it forced upon you, what are some of the things that you can do to make up for what you're lacking?
Karen, you want to talk about it? Would you like me to?
I think
the most important thing you can do
I thought we. I think we lost Karen, and I'm not sure if she's back yet. Yeah.
All right. The most important thing you can do is to have a positive attitude. I mean, this is very hard to get, but it's the most valuable thing in the world. And the thing that you can help you to do that is to try and get as much sleep as you can, to get the exercise that you need, to lower your stress and get into stress reduction, and to eat healthily. And these are really the four legs of the stool for good health. And so women who have hot flashes, if they do exercise in a regular way, if they hydrate, get plenty of water, if they avoid smoking, that's something they definitely shouldn't be doing, exercising 30 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week. And that actually helps retain your cardiac output, because people who don't exercise between the ages of 30 and 70 have a drop in about 30% of their cardiac output. So their cardiac ejection goes way down, and it's exercise that keeps it going. And then limiting alcohol to one glass of wine at the most, or one beer, or an ounce of spirits daily, and avoiding caffeine. These are all things, limiting salt and soda. These are all things that can help a woman to reduce the hot flashes and the experience that she has.
Well,
better.
What I love about hearing all of this is that all of these things you're recommending are things that are good for all general health. And you can say the same things for, lowering your risk for heart disease and diabetes and good
high
health.
Blood pressure, everything.
Everything. I love the way nature works that way.
Well, I look at health as a continuum. If we look at wellness to illness, if we continue to take poor care of our bodies, then what happens is slowly but surely we start to move towards illness. And so eventually we get to a tipping point, we pass over the middle of the fulcrum and we drop into illness. Then we've got to get well. But if we can stay well by simply allowing ourselves to take care of ourselves a day at a time, then it's much easier to stay well. You cannot cram for life. You've got to live life a day at a time. You just can't go in, one day and decide, I'm going to be healthy, do something really intensively for one day, and then expect things to change. We've got to be proactive about it. That's what we tried to do with our book. The Eat to Defeat Menopause really has a lot. The first 60 pages of the book is just chock full of health information that's easy to understand. It talks about menopause. It talks about what you should be eating and nutritional tips and health information. And then the rest of the book has 130 recipes or so, both from my kitchen and both from Karen's kitchen, but also from top chefs from around the country. So we went to former White House chefs. We went to people at the top restaurants. And each one gave their favorite recipe or two. And then we had the nutritional department at the University of Massachusetts, where I work, going through it and analyzing it for protein, fats, carbohydrates, how many calories. So you know exactly what you're eating. And then we have, of course, divided into breakfast and into lunch and appetizers and for dinners, soups and stews. And, and salads. So it's divided up so you can find what you want. And then we were fortunate enough, Dean Ornish thought it was a great book, so he wrote the foreword for our book. It was a very lovely foreword. And throughout it, we give some red-hot tips, you know, for portion control or for things that we've learned from the yogis or for, you know, different kinds of things that women will find useful as they look through it and can just say, okay, I'm not going to read the whole book, of course, but I'm going to look for a recipe, and while I'm at it, I'm going to find a little red-hot tip that will be helpful for me today.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, and the recipes are actually extremely delicious. And we've tried most of the recipes ourselves, and we've made a lot of them ourselves. And it's just, they're excellent, excellent. And, you know, we deal with a lot of Mediterranean diets and things like that on it. We have tuna and bean salads, pasta, and I know that I'm Italian, and, you know, you can eat a pasta, but you have to eat it in a small portion, and you won't gain any weight. And in Italy, you know, the women aren't heavy because it's not, spaghetti and pasta is not weighted down with heavy cheese sauces.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways of eating that are healthy for you.
Well, there are a lot of interesting recipes in here. I'm a vegan, and I promote all the plant foods, and so there are some really interesting ones, watercress salad with fennel. I love watercress, and I'm always encouraging people to eat their greens because there's so many wonderful things in them.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of great things here. I don't personally like to encourage dairy or fish foods, and I know that they're in here, and I know that a lot of people eat them. I think there are other issues with regard to the environment and some other health issues where I prefer to eat plant foods. But overall, I think this is pretty well balanced.
Great.
Well, we tried to have something for everyone because
mm-hmm.
what happens is I think a plant-based diet is just fantastic, and I know I primarily am vegetarian, not exclusively. That's a large part of what I eat. But I know that many people are eating other types of food, and so Karen and I incorporated things that would be of value to the people who do choose to eat otherwise.
Okay, so one of the things that I really like is there's so much talk about soy, and there's so much fear about soy. And you devoted a good chunk in the book about soy and how good it is and which soy foods are good. So I just want to underline that. I don't quite understand why there's been so much fear wrapped around soy foods in this country.
You know, soy gets a really bad rap, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that there was a study that was published that showed that if you take cancer cells, the actual cells, breast cancer, and you put them in culture, depending on how you do the culture, how you do the counting of cells by DNA, there was one study that suggested that soy had some role in cancer production. On the other hand, with that exception, there's really been no evidence that soy stimulates cancer cells unless it was, you know, in people who don't have it. And the fact of the matter is that in China and other Asian countries, the incidence of cancer and breast cancer is actually lower than in the United States, where soy is a staple.
Right.
Well, I think one of the issues are that you know, is when we get involved in taking supplements, a lot of the different supplements. And, you know, incorporating soy into our diets is totally different than taking the consumption of supplements. So what we've tried to do is explain carefully, you know, the role that soy plays in our diets and how it can affect hot flashes and other things. So, but many people are confused about how to incorporate it in our diet.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the great recipes come in.
Yes.
What about estrogen replacement? Do you work with patients with that, Dr. Seibel?
Oh, many, of course.
And does it help? I've heard so many mixed things about it.
Well, I mean, there's no question that in 97% of women, giving estrogen is going to relieve the symptoms that they come for. Most typically hot flashes or vaginal dryness or prevention of bone loss. Estrogen is not a question of if it's helpful. The mm-hmm. question is always weighing the benefits and the risk. And mm-hmm. for some women, after the Women's Health Initiative study, there was a lot of concern about, was it more risk than benefit?
Right.
And, you know, most recently, the big bugaboo was in 2001, which is now about 10 years ago, when the Women's Health Initiative study came out, showing an increase of cancer of the breast and blood clots and so forth. But in that study, the increase incidence was exactly 8 patients per 10,000 increase. In other words, some women who don't take it get breast cancer and some don't. But 8 more per 10,000 women got breast cancer, which is 8 per 10,000, or 0.8 per 1,000, or 0.08 per 100, which is less than a tenth of a percent.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But it was a prevention study, and therefore the study was discontinued. Now, just a few months ago in the Journal of the American Medical Association, another 10,000 women who had their uterus removed and therefore took estrogen only, not progesterone, but only estrogen, were followed, and it was found that the women who only took estrogen actually had a 23% reduction in breast cancer risk compared to the women who didn't get it.
Hmm.
So the data keeps needing to be updated and refined and specified, and every woman needs to talk with her doctor about what's right for her.
And also, the latest findings are shorter-term use of estrogen for moderate to severe symptoms at the time of menopause may be a very effective way in dealing with the menopausal symptoms.
Hmm. Okay. That's good to know. Kind of help your body transition.
Yes, but not taking it much later after the onset of menopause, but at the time of menopause taken for a short duration of time to get over that severe or moderate to severe symptoms is very effective.
So one of the things that I really enjoyed discovering is the music, Dr. Seibel, that you connect with your health practice. And I love the humor. I think music is so important. I'm a singer myself, and I think it's an effective way to get information out, so I really appreciate that you're doing that, and I appreciate the humor.
Well, thank you. People who do learn by musical messaging do activate more parts of the brain than people who are receiving just the spoken word. So it is a very helpful tool, just like Schoolhouse Rock, some people will remember, was very popular for getting people to remember Conjunction Junction and things like I'm Just a Bill on Capitol Hill. And those songs, which are now part of the culture, the reason they were effective is they taught people ways to remember using different parts of their brain, just giving them a better recall, the music, the rhythm, et cetera.
And, you know, there's no prescription required to laugh. And so,
that is true.
Definitely. And I think of all times, you've got to honor your humor at menopause, you know, and keep that twinkle in your wrinkle. So Mesh is doing a very, very good job at that with his website, Dr. Seibel. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, Karen has a lot of wonderful content on it as well, lots of information. So the listeners can go to either of our websites, either redhotmamas.org or drseibel.com, and get lots of information that they can just go through at their leisure.
Okay. Is there you say you should talk to your doctor for help, but sometimes we can't find a doctor that has this information. Are there places to go to find doctors that are plugged into the whole nutrition scene and have a more integrative approach?
Well,
Actually, you can go onto the North American Menopause Society's website, which is menopause.org, and they will have a list of menopause clinicians who are certified. And, you know, on redhotmamas.org and drseibelshealthrock.com, you know, you'll also find some doctors as well.
Okay, that's really good to know. because I think more and more doctors are realizing the importance of nutrition, but I've talked to far too many that don't know enough about how helpful simple things can be, and some unfortunately believe that their patients don't want to make changes. And I just think it's important that the doctor promote the importance of healthy diet and lifestyle.
I do think that that today we're having to be more advocates for our own selves. And I think that people need to understand that prevention is the important thing, that things like this book was inspired by trying to help people, help women to have a diet and nutritional information that can help them and they can incorporate into their daily lives. Along with exercise and stress reduction and getting enough sleep, these are kind of, as I said earlier, the real cornerstones of good health. And women can talk to their doctors and see if they share these beliefs, and if they don't, they can, you know, look for other people that are more inclined to go along that way.
Well, there are lots of symptoms that you list here for perimenopause, and some of them I think go into menopause, hot flashes, insomnia, weight gain, vaginal dryness, palpitations, lower sexual desire, depression. And it really is good to know that we have some control over the magnitude of all of these symptoms.
Absolutely. They can all be modified by our behavior. By that I mean the things we've been talking about, our diet and nutrition, our exercise, lowering our stress, sleeping more. If we can get everybody organized to work on these particular things and make little changes over time, they can have a much healthier, longer vital life.
Now, I don't want to include the men out of this discussion, but I do know some men that also have hot flashes. Is it a similar type of phenomenon going on?
Well, most of the men that I know that have hot flashes are generally men who are on different medications that are causing it. I don't know any men that are having them outside of that.
Oh, okay, I do.
Yeah, well, maybe there are some. They're in touch with their feminine side.
Right. Okay. Well, do you have a little jingle or something that you could give us before we sign off?
I don't know what to say in a very quick way, but I...
Well, one of the things that I love watching your little videos is the big smile. And it's so important, all this information that you're giving us, to know that we have the power, we can take control, it's not hard to do, and it's easy, it's friendly. So I thank you for that tone. It's really important.
Menopause isn't a disease. It's a natural occurring phase of life, not unlike puberty, not unlike the reproductive years. It's just another phase. And the more we can embrace it and embrace our dietary intake and plan to eat healthy, then I think we can have a much better transition through it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Karen Giblin and Dr. Mish Seibel. I really appreciate you coming on to talk about your book, Eat to Defeat Menopause. And I want to repeat your website. So we have redhotmamas.org and drseibel.com, spelling out Dr. Seibel. And there's more information there, not just on menopause. Lots of other Stay Well programs as well.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed being with you.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.